You're listening to Face Off, episode 38, recorded October 11th, 2009. Face Off. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship, and of course, much more. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com, because hopefully you'll need the show notes.
Yeah, we got some good links in there. Oftentimes, we link to the content and some additional things, so yeah. It's good to check that out.
Sometimes we explain our jokes when they're bad, which is... never happens. I don't know. Nope. Our longtime listeners can say that we, you know, our jokes are great. Everybody gets them. Hey, well, speaking of, hey, Mark, you know, I asked you earlier, you know, how many software engineers does it take to change a light bulb?
Right.
So, I mean, have you thought about it? Do you know how many there it takes yet?
No.
Well, I can tell you what, light bulb works on my machine, man. Oh, that was a bad one. I'm going to give it anyways. Get it? You ever done that? You know, when you're like, this won't work. And everybody's like, works on my machine.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen as much in web programming.
No.
But it can if you're doing like distributed web development, like with Rails and stuff. Mm. I've had it happen in my office.
Well, the plugin, I have an example, the Rails. I have everything working on the development thing. I even have a production server where it works exactly the same script and everything. And then I, you know, added it to this other host saying it doesn't work.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just because of the gem structure, my other box, I had root access so I can easily install a gem, whereas the other one, you got to like do all this pointing to this other folder and stuff.
It should work fine, though. Like, I found that when I don't have root access and I install a gem, it knows how to find it locally. Interesting. But yes, we've all had that happen once where, you know, especially I remember when we would do Java programming back in school, you know, you test something and you'd send someone your code and they'd be like, it works on my machine. What error are you trying to debug? And you're like, oh, man. Anyways, let's get on with it. So let's get into our news and follow-ups. The first news item that I want to talk about was a recent announcement by Twitter that they're going to be launching a feature called Lists.
What is a list?
A list is, they call it a list, but it's more of a group, right? It's like you take particular Twitter users and you group them together saying like, you know, these people are comedians, these people are athletes I follow, these people are coworkers. And then it just kind of helps organize the information you're seeing on your Twitter homepage. The cool thing about them, though, is you can make a list public and people can subscribe to them.
So they're hoping that, you know, this is an extra discovery mechanism. I'm going to go to your Twitter site profile and say, oh, you know, here's his group of important web developers that I should
totally
that you're following. I can then, you know, pick one of those or, you know, maybe you follow some sports guys that I don't care about, but you've got some web development guys. Yeah. I can go in there and
subscribe to that list if you want to. Yeah. Or just see. I mean, it'll be nice. The fact that I'm assuming it'll change things like Follow Friday, you know, which traditionally in the past you just kind of posted about. But now you could say you don't have to really do a Follow Friday. You can say subscribe to my list of cool people and you can see it there in its natural habitat.
Also, are you going to be able to look at the lists individually so you can kind of, if I want to check out only tweets from people I know personally?
I mean, I'm assuming that's the basic functionality, is that you'll go in and you can click on your list of sports people and it'll only show you tweets of sports people or web development people, just things like that, yeah.
I'm interested to see how that changes the way people use Twitter.
I think so, too. Twitter is a very diverse and very fast-moving product. So, I mean, really, the slightest change to Twitter can change the way that people use it so significantly.
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting to see. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, did you think how revolutionary it was when Facebook introduced Facebook apps?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of ruined it for me.
Yeah, it did ruin it for a lot of people. I mean, you know, like I've scheduled events before and people don't know what they are because they're just so used to using these sort of goofy third-party apps. I don't use any of them. I mean, I used like two or three when I first got on board when they first, you know, were launched. But other than that, I hate it. I mean, I liked that Facebook was about connecting with getting my friends' information in pictures.
And now it's kind of distracting. It's like, this person thought this of you and you should respond by
It's a lot like MySpace, you know. Instead of forwarding these quizzes along with as text in emails, now they forward these quizzes, their apps inside Facebook, and it's what character from this Disney movie are you? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm Flounder from The Little Mermaid. Ooh,
it's almost like this is the general what the general population wants, though. I mean, this is chain letters all over again.
It is, it bugs me because I don't get it and I don't like it, but I understand why Facebook's doing it because they are getting a ton of visitors, making a ton of money right now.
People like it, yeah, definitely.
I don't know, but Twitter is even more dynamic than Facebook because it's really a different environment.
Yeah.
It's a lot of just purely tech savvy people who are very vocal about things they don't like, which is important as well.
Yeah.
But so I think lists will be a good thing to have along, and I'm kind of excited to see them when they come about.
Now, you know, before we close this topic, there are some apps that actually do this for you. What's going to happen to those? I mean, this is kind of the risk that you have for, you know, riding the back of Twitter, and then they change something.
That's, you know, you and I have talked about this not on the show before, but yeah, it's Twitter has a great sort of business model going because people use their API to do these cool things, and all Twitter has to really do is copy it.
And you're done.
And it's amazing. Yeah, you're done. You're out of business because you were, you know, doing this feature for Twitter, and then Twitter gets, you know, the praise for like, they're so innovative and taking these cool, you know.
Yep.
That's why I've never liked the idea of totally making a business plan that rode on the back of something like Twitter. There was some web app that we talked about on the show where we made that exact same comment, and I can't remember what app it was, but they actually came back to us and they said, oh, well, yeah.
I think that's TwitPay, like the one where you could pay through Twitter, like PayPal, but through Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was.
I forget the name of it.
I can't remember the name of it either, but they basically came back and said, yeah, we've realized that as well. We're looking at other avenues. But Twitter is a good starting point. He said, I agree that people shouldn't make their entire business plan around integrating with Twitter. Mm-hmm. But it's a good starting point. But you need to keep going and moving so that, you know, your whole business model isn't centered around if Twitter lets you or not.
Yeah. All right. So then that wraps it up for our news and follows. We've got the web apps up. And the first one we've got is an online resume maker, CV.
Yeah, so, man, what is it? It's the term CV is an academic term, I believe. It basically means like a resume with your teaching and publication credentials.
Really?
Yeah, it's like curriculum vitae or something like that. I probably just butchered that, but so that's where they got the name.
Well, that's news to me, so I learned something.
Yeah. So a CV is a really simple little fun app that it says, you know, make your resume online. I wouldn't make this your entire resume. I'm kind of picky about my resume. But it would be a really good address to put on your resume. Like, you know, check out cv.com/JadeRobbins. You go to it. It's got like your, you know, mail, the year I was born, if I married, you know, my phone, my website, my email, and then I can put like a summary of my experience, my skills, things I've studied in school, and from there I could save it as a PDF or print it. But it's just kind of a good online place to put some general resume-like information about yourself up.
I mean, you've seen, I think you work in a place where you get to see a lot of resumes and stuff. Do you find that, I mean, this would be an added value for like the format-wise and make it look nice, or?
I'm not sure. The best thing you can ever do to try and get a job is be in a job where you have to hire people, because you'd be amazed at what you don't see, what you do see, what you notice about people. If I saw this address on a resume, I would check it out.
Okay.
But if someone just filled this out and then saved it as a PDF and sent it to me, I would not be impressed.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a resume is hard. This would be a good place, let's say, to put extended information. Like, you want to keep your resume on one paper, and you want to put extended information here.
Yeah.
This would be a good spot to do it.
Or let's say you're somewhere and you don't have your resume printed off, you don't have it ready for you.
Absolutely.
You just say, go to cv.com/mark. You can even write it on the back of your business card or something.
Absolutely. That's somebody. A great point. That's totally when, you know, you're caught with someone that's like, well, give me your resume. I'd love to take a look at it. And you're like, oh, man, I just ran out.
Yeah.
Definitely. Go to cv.com. You know, that's a great example. It's a great use case for it. You know, a lot of people, one thing they do is, you know, like if I have jaderobbins.com, I should and would put my resume up there.
Right.
That's okay because I have a URL with other information behind it.
Not
but
everybody
if
has
you
a
don't,
website.
This is a great one to it. Yeah, I agree. That's a great, actually, that's the best use case for it I have found or that I've heard yet.
So this is kind of like, we talked about, what is it, Cardly, card.ly. This is kind of like that, but for like a more of a professional resume kind of space.
Absolutely.
I noticed they use like the connect to Facebook. We talked about OAuth and like connecting. Mm-hmm. And what do you think about like the Facebook?
Face off.
They don't use OAuth, do they?
But I noticed a lot of apps use something similar. I think it might be basically their own hacked up version of OAuth, or they don't call it OAuth, but it's basically the same system. It uses their app system. You're right. It uses sort of their app system, which may use OAuth. I'm going to shut up now because I don't know for sure.
Okay, sure.
But it's a very similar system where you have to be logged into Facebook and it connects and you say, oh, you allowed this one.
This is me.
Yep.
And then they have maybe extended information.
A lot of Facebook stuff, though, too, strictly does almost open ID like authentication. Mm-hmm. Whereas OAuth is specifically designed to connect two apps together. Facebook, you can just literally authenticate via it without really connecting and doing things together.
I notice a lot of web apps are starting to use these types of registration systems. Mm-hmm. Makes it a little bit easier on the user, but
yeah, I'm a little disappointed that Twitter and Facebook are the big ones that we're seeing. I'd rather see more generic OAuth stuff. I wish there was
like OpenID or something,
or OpenID, not OAuth. Yeah, OpenID, because I just don't like these sort of very self-focused big websites being the standard for something like that.
Yeah. For example, I mean, we talked about the apps ruining it for me for Facebook. I don't really use Facebook, so I would never connect with Facebook.
I wish Facebook did like open ID authentication, because then I would even possibly think of using it. But the fact that they have their own system that may or may not be, who knows, I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't agree with Facebook, you're probably, and the fact they hate that they would, if they became the standard, you would not like it.
And I hate, and if they are using open ID, I want them to advertise it more so that more people recognize the term open ID and would use it. That's a bummer, but it's CVCEEVEE.com. Cool little app. I like it. The next one's going to be really quick. It's but very useful, very small, very useful app. It's called whereismycellphone.com. And what this does is helps you find your cell phone by calling it for you.
Yeah, I mean, you just put the area code in and the number. We tested it out, and it just rings your phone.
And then you answer it, it shuts up.
So, I mean, you might be like, why do I need this? Well, I mean, you could be at your home by yourself and you don't have a friend by that has a cell phone, and you could just hit this app up and be like, where's my cell phone?
You don't know how many times my wife says to me, call my phone, I can't find it. Call my phone, I can't find it. Well, if I wasn't here, she would be in trouble.
Be looking all over the
without
house.
Without this app. So, it's great. I think it's cool because they tell you how many phones that they have found with this. If you try and call too many times, of course, though, you can't do it like twice in a row because it's like, whoa, don't be spamming people there.
Yeah, I mean, I accidentally typed in, when we were testing it, I accidentally typed in the phone number wrong, and it wouldn't let me do another phone number within, like, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes. So.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, you don't want pranksters using the site.
No, I don't want someone. Phones. Yeah, I don't want someone to keep ringing my phone all day long on this site. So that's good.
I noticed, though, they do have a do not call. So if for some reason somebody was using it to call you every 5 minutes using like a script or something, you could
put
your phone in there. I also noticed they have over 2 million phones they have found.
That's crazy.
So a lot of people are using the service.
It's very useful. It's a great idea about it. So check it out. Like I said, if you need to find your phone and you don't have a friend to call it for you nearby, just go to whereismycellphone.com, put your number in, it'll ring it for you. All right. Well, that wraps it up for our news and follow-ups. I want to remind all of our listeners that if you have a web app you want us to look at or some news about something that we've talked about in the past or a follow-up, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know.
All right. We got some... an article here, 15 Common Mistakes in E-Commerce Design.
Yeah, you and I read this article, and we both really liked it. I think it's great. It's got a lot of tips on it. Let's hit them down for our listeners.
All right, the first one we've got is a lack of detailed product information. I mean,
drives me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, if you're giving people an excuse to go somewhere else to find information about that product, I mean,
absolutely. If I hit Alt-T to open a new tab and go to Google to look up product information about it, that's not good.
Make sure you have all the information, whether it's the size of it, if it's a shirt, what kind of fabric it is or whatever. Have as much information as possible. You got to remember that, people are coming from a brick and mortar, standpoint, and they're used to looking at it and feeling it and touching it.
Yeah. I get very nervous when I buy things online sometimes, especially if they cost, more than $20, because I'm afraid if if I get something that I don't really want or it's not what I thought it was, I'm really mad because that's $20 wasted.
Yep.
You know, I mean, anything below that I don't get too upset about, but there's a price limit where I'm definitely like, man, I want more information about this.
Yeah, and it's, especially if it's something that you don't know a whole lot about. I mean, if it's not like a piece of software or something, maybe it's like some hobby that you're getting into and you don't know a whole lot about it, but you're kind of researching mm-hmm. the topic, you want to have as much information there as possible.
Yeah, and I mean, and if like the box has any specs on it or anything like that, you know, you need it. You need to grab it. Go to their website, you know, take them. You know, copy and paste them from their website if you have to, but make sure it's up there. You know, if you can even find a manual online, do that.
Yep. The next one is, you know, this is something you don't want to be doing, is hiding the contact information. You want to have the contact information right up at the top right corner, maybe in the footer. Have it all over the page if you can. You know, not having contact information is very, I mean, it lowers the credibility of your site. People get skeptical.
Absolutely. You think, why are these people, do they not want me to get a hold of them? Do they not, or you think, do they not really exist? Are they just some guy in his bedroom? I don't know. And you don't want that. You want people to think that, you know, you are a real business. You may not have a brick and mortar storefront, but you want them to think that, you know, if they really got mad, they could drive to wherever you live and talk to a customer service rep there.
Yeah. The more expensive the product or the more technical the product is, you know, whether you're selling software or whatever, you're going to want some contact support or technical support, phone numbers, email addresses, maybe a ticket support, something.
The more advanced things are, the higher possibility someone's going to want to ask questions about it because they want to know if it is something that they want. Will it work? You know, I mean, how many times, I don't know if you've done this, but when I worked for our sysadmin team on campus, it was really tough because, like, when you're looking for cables or adapters or things like that, you're like, God, is this what I want? The pins look the same, but there's been times where you buy something and it's not right, and you're, oh, man, and it's some weird store with like a really kind of junky looking theme on it, and you know they look really shady, and you're like, oh.
It might not have a phone number. You have to do email only. And
yeah, totally. I agree, definitely.
The next one is a long or confusing checkout process.
Oh, this is annoying because like you don't. You want to lower the activation cost of getting that user to buy something on your site.
Yeah, if you've got an extra step in there, I mean, sometimes when people make a decision, it's because of an impulse that they have or whatever, and they're halfway through, and if they have any excuse at all to back out, sometimes it's like,
that's all it takes. Man, yeah,
I don't want to fill this out. Screw it. And they're out.
Oh, totally. I've done that. Yeah, you're like, why are you making me put my billing information in when it's the same as my shipping information? You should have a button that says, this is the same. Exactly. Don't make me do that. That's stupid.
Also, like if you have something on there that looks like if they have shipping only but not like the billing or something that's a little off, I mean, you want it all on one page. You don't want to have it something to drive them away.
Yeah, I guess. Or like clear indicators of where they are in the process. You know, am I 5 pages deep and still have 10 more to go? That's not very cool, you know. If I know that, you know, I fill this out and then like one more is like a confirmation where I just have to click yes, that's right, and go to the next step. Okay, I'm willing to finish this out now. The next one is requiring an account to order. And this is something that a lot of people have a hard time with. They really do because they think, well, I need their information. They're my customer. I want to keep them. And they're obviously going to come back 100 times, you know. And the truth is they don't a lot of times.
Right. I mean, sometimes it's like, oh, you got to log in to purchase. And people are just like, yeah, screw it. I'll go somewhere else.
I mean, you know, and the way to fix this is have a guest account, a way to purchase without making an account. I remember there's one site I did this that had a way to purchase without creating an account. And I remember being actually surprised by it. I was like, whoa. This is not what I'm used to.
A tip they give here in the article is to get the account information. Like if they're going to make an account, get it at the very end.
Yep.
So they still have to write it in, but.
And then say, why you want to make an account with all this information? Because then you can, you know, come back again. And then the other thing is, I mean, sometimes realize what you're doing. And so one day I bought a belt for my vacuum off one site.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not joking. They still send me a newsletter once a month about vacuum stuff, general vacuum stuff. I mean, not even stuff specific to the model that I bought the belt for, just like, vacuum stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't need that. Is not, I'm not a recurring customer here. If I need vacuum parts, I'm probably going to look you up, but I'm not going to be like reading my email and be like, oh man, I really should get that new sweet bag for my vacuum.
So have a checkbox on your site that says, please, sign me up to marketing promotional things, or I am not interested in marketing promotional.
Opt in, don't make them opt out.
Right.
Number five is having an inadequate site search engine.
Yeah, I mean, I would say don't have one if you're going to have it inadequate. And I find that a lot of these, especially the big stores, sometimes have very poor search engines. Like, you'll search and it's just nothing relevant to what you're searching for. Half the times I don't even bother using them. I use like the browse the categories or something like that.
Yeah, it's very tough. I mean, like, if t-shirts are a weird market. Like, if you're looking for t-shirts, you'll search for one, you know, design on a t-shirt, and you'll be completely surprised at the designs that come back in the search. You're like, this is completely useless. How does that have to do anything with, you know, Vim?
We've talked about, like, Google has a custom search that's really good. It's branded towards Google, but...
people are used to Google, and so I don't think it's a terrible thing. You can integrate it really well within your website. But the thing is, also make sure you have good information on your product as well, right? If you do a Google search through your website, but you don't have really good content about your products in there, if you don't have enough information, like we talked up, earlier, it's going to be harder for that search engine to really find your stuff within your site as well. Mm-hmm. It may not be the search's problem. It may be the content's problem too. So look at both. Think of, if you have like a tagging system for your cart, tag it with as much relevant search type things you might think about it, because it's just for your site. That's okay.
Yeah, it's going to make the search, better and allow the engine to do its job.
Exactly. Allow the engine to do its job, because, if you have obviously Google is the best search engine out there. Mm-hmm. Let it do its job.
The next one is poor customer service options. I would say you should probably have a phone number.
Absolutely.
Some of these companies try to do email only, and that's okay, but
it's tough. It a lot of people like the phone. I would not want to have a phone number for my business just because I hate talking on the phone.
Right.
But if it's something that my customers really wanted. But again, if I didn't have a phone number, I would probably have every other type of support available, known to man, including like live chat support. Like, what was that web app we talked about a while ago? I will put it in the show notes. That is a way to do live customer support help. Mm-hmm. Like, if you could do that, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, have like, if you are a brick and mortar store, have a store locator. Have show what's in stock, the availability. Show maybe give an FAQ. Anything to supplement the potential questions you could get, and you'll limit the amount of support calls and emails you'll get.
Exactly.
And it'll actually help the customer too.
Have like a ticket system, have an FAQ, have all of that. Definitely. You need to make sure you have, and again, it's bringing realness to your business. Is this just a website out in the middle of nowhere designed to take credit card numbers, or is this a business trying to sell items to real customers?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at a screenshot of, a customer service page, and they have like track your order. You can put the order number in a little box. Nice. So it's like, I mean, they've got all their bases covered.
Yeah. So. And that's all people want, in one place to get it easily.
Definitely. And also, if you're a new customer, you haven't actually ordered yet, but you click on the customer service tab to see kind of what they're about, and you see all this, phone numbers and fax numbers and track your order, it adds credibility to the site.
Yeah, and I mean, people that haven't ordered from you yet are still customers. I mean, when you own a brick and mortar store and someone walks through the door, you think of that person as a customer. Well, when someone visits your website, even if they haven't made an order yet, they're still a customer.
Number seven, tiny product images.
This drives me nuts. I hate it. I get so mad when this happens.
Yeah, I mean, take Newegg, for example, a very successful computer parts store. They'll take like 10 images of the same thing, flipped in every angle you can imagine, and close-ups and faraways.
There's been a couple of websites that sell T-shirts that have very complex designs on them, and I go, I try to get the bigger image to really see the design, and it pulls up this tiny image, and half of them even say, zoom in if you want to, but it's the same image. Yeah, it's the same image, and you zoom in and it's pixelated, and you're like, well, that does me absolutely no good. Thank you. Yeah. So it just take the time. And you know, if you're a smaller store, they can make these, they have these great little like miniature photo white boxes, you know, for taking great pictures that have like full good light with like no background, mm-hmm. you know, for I think $40 on ThinkGeek, you can get one or make your own. There's Lifehacker articles on how to do your own white box and you can take great product images and you know, it's there. Take 5, 6, 7 of them. Take as many as you can, make them high quality, big res images.
Yeah, they're recommending 1024 by 768 for the general resolution you should shoot for.
Totally.
And don't just blow it up like you said and have it pixelated. No. Actually take a one, you know, a 1024 picture.
Absolutely.
Scale it to that.
Like, you know, in the screenshot here, they have a shirt with like a pinstripe design. Well, let me get up close on that detail, the pinstripe. Maybe most people might not care, but there's going to be one or two people that really want to see what that pinstripe is like. You know, maybe they read some research that three stripes means, you know, that you're not confident or something. You know, you never know.
Right.
But the whole point is your job is to sell these items to people and people want to see the things. They want to make them more tangible while you're buying online. You want to feel like you can see that item in your hand or on yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you're competing with a store where people can grab that shirt and really look at it. So, I mean, try to bridge that gap and show what it is.
Yeah. The next one actually is only one product image, which you kind of touched on last time. Make sure you have plenty. Don't just take one. Even if it is a high resolution, big image, don't take just one. Take multiples.
Yeah, have a front, a back, a side. You know, some people are, you know, might be interested in a certain component cable on like a monitor and they want to see if that is there on the back accessible or something.
Yeah,
you know, you never know.
Oh, every computer, every time I look at a Dell computer or a motherboard, the second picture I look at is a picture of the back. I want to see what, you know, does it come with two video things? Because if it doesn't, then I know I don't even need to look at it because I want dual monitors, you know. Mm-hmm. What do I look at? Does it have at least, you know, multiple audio ports so that I, you know, the things I'm looking for in a generic workstation?
Yep. And if it's like a shirt, you know, do front and back and.
Exactly. Yeah. Number 9 is a poor shopping cart design. This is tough. I've seen a lot of sites where you can't really tell what's in your cart. You like glancing over real quick, you're like, what am I buying? I don't know yet until you know actually check out.
Their example here is they've got like a light box, you know, pure JavaScript. You know, that might not work in every browser and it might confuse people. It almost looks like a pop-up.
Yeah,
I would say my tip would be to go check out sites that are research this all day long, like Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, your site might not apply to the same as Amazon because they're so big and have so many different products, but kind of look at kind of seeing what they're doing.
And maybe if people are going to buy more than one thing, you know, make your view cart, your shopping cart useful. Make it so I click on it and I say, okay, well, according to what I have in my profile, this plus shipping will cost me this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the shopping cart, I want to see what I have and what my total is.
Yep.
And make sure, you know, it's cleanly thought out. Like, you know, you worked on a shopping cart once that was really good. It had really good steps all the way through. I knew how far I was, you know, really clean and smooth.
Yeah, and I would say don't get creative here. This isn't the place to do it. Make it similar to everybody else because they've already been shopping somewhere else and they're used to that way. If your site is the same, they're gonna feel right at home and be able to just get in there and get the job done.
Yeah, like there's sites like when they have in the shopping cart like nice little thumbnails beside each item because that's really, I mean, a lot of times the product descriptions are so complex and annoying that I don't really look at them anyways. I'm looking at the picture, right? I can see I have this, this, and that on there. Okay, that's, you know, because like sometimes, especially when you get on these weird sites like, you know, Amazon where there's really deep products and stuff, sometimes like the title is just so long and confusing, it makes almost no sense as to what the product actually is.
Yeah. And you might want to maybe even do like A-B split testing to see which one has more conversion rates.
Yeah,
could do that. And don't make it overly complex and have too many offers. Like, you know, GoDaddy's one that comes to mind. Oh,
goodness, that is so annoying. Like, do you want hosting? Do you want these five things? Do you want security? Do you want us to check your website every day? Do you want us to walk your dog when you buy a domain? You're like, just let me go. You know, and I never know what parts are required and what aren't. That is terrible. That drives me.
It's very complex. It's like, oh, did I forget to uncheck an offer? Because there's so many of them, and it's just.
Or like you go to a page and it's checked by default. Like turn this into a 2-year renewal for only $5 less, and you're like, okay, whoa. You have to every step of the GoDaddy checkout, you have to read every single line and think about it, and then you're like, I just want to renew it the exact same way it was last year. Please just take that plus one.
The next one is lack of payment options. If you only accept PayPal or only accept one kind of merchant, I mean, there's people that are very loyal to PayPal, and they try to use that.
Yeah, totally. And there's some that, you know, they just want to put in their credit card and get out of it. You know, it.
Yeah, I mean, the reverse option, like let's say you only had PayPal and somebody didn't have a PayPal account. Now they have to go and register for a PayPal account, put bank information, put all kinds of stuff. Yeah. They can't check out. So
exactly.
Give them as many options as possible to check out.
Yeah. But I think we were talking about this earlier too, though. I think you need to be careful about sites that, you know, like I feel when it says pay with a credit card through PayPal, I feel like I know that that's going to be secure. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when they have the sort of brew your own credit card system, I get very nervous about it. And
because you have
sure.
No idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
Are they storing your credit card in a database in plain text? I mean, you have no idea.
Exactly. Are they emailing it? Does the whole order get emailed to some customer service person that has to process the order? That's not very...
I've actually even seen that style.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It happens all the time.
Day, so.
And so it makes me very nervous. I'm not... I don't know. But, you know, try and make it seem... Again, make sure if you have, you know, PayPal credit card processing, make sure they don't have to log in. Make sure there is the ability for them to stay, you know, to just put their information in through PayPal and have it pay you so that they don't have to create an account. It's the same thing as, you know, we talked about making them have an account just to check out. You shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I think PayPal actually has a way to, so they can put their credit card if they're a first time user of PayPal.
Yeah, so. Totally. And that's a good way to do it.
So the next one is not including related products. Amazon was the first one that really comes to mind for me when they did this. It's like, oh, you got this. Other customers bought this.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
they do a great
cool.
job, and it's dirty because they're like, oh, I like this mouse. And you're like, wait a minute. You know, customers that viewed this also viewed these items, and on average they purchased that one, you know, three times more. What is so good about that mouse that's bad about this one? And then you look at it and you're like, oh, that is a better mouse.
Yeah, and it allows you to compare. It's like if you're shopping a certain brand and you're like, well, I'm not sure on this mouse. I think it's the one. And then you see some other ones, like you said, you might be like, oh, I want that one.
Yeah. And again, this is like if your e-commerce store is sorted by, you know, if you have categories and tags, these are great ways to find related items, you know, similar tags or just things in the same category. You know, if they're looking at shoes, then show other shoes. You never know. They, you know, you might.
Or socks, like a related item.
Exactly. You know, like maybe, oh, those. Nice new socks do look comfortable. I want those.
Yeah, any related items, you're going to have add-on sales. And so Amazon.
But just make them non-obtrusive. Make sure you don't, you know, you don't want it to become
like
a pop-bust. Yeah, exactly.
You think you want all this.
Like, you want, you have a web domain. You must want hosting. You want good hosting. And you're like, no, GoDaddy, I have a host already. This site has been hosted by itself for a year. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
The next one is confusing navigation. And this is just, I mean, this is a problem all over the internet.
Yeah, not just in e-commerce, but just sites in general. Try to keep it consistent. Yahoo's got a web app. It's like UI something where they've done common UI patterns.
Nice.
User interface patterns. You know, people expect certain information in certain places, like the contact should be in the footer and the header and, you know, try to stick with those for the most part.
Yeah, I hate websites when they have like categories and subcategories of products and stuff, but they don't. Like sometimes I know of a product. I say I know what this is, and I go and I search for it and I find it there. But then I like so a great example is my hot water kettle. It's a Cespresso hot water kettle, you know, and I didn't really know what to call it at the time. I was like, it's not a teapot. It's not, you know, so like I found that online, but all I wanted to do was step back one step to that category and see the other ones like it.
Okay.
And there was nowhere to be found, right? It was like, it's in kitchen and you're like, okay, well, I know it's like three steps deeper than kitchen, but I want things just like it. And the similar products weren't working well for me. Or I didn't want to just see the five similar products that I should buy. I want to see all of them, but I didn't know what they were called, and I was kind of frustrated with that.
Yeah, they actually have a term for that. What you were talking about, the breadcrumb navigation, where it's like the trail of things that you were in.
Yeah,
you know, as you go deeper into this.
But
site.
Make sure your breadcrumb is also useful, because like I said, they had a breadcrumb, but the breadcrumb said kitchen, home and kitchen, Cespresso.
There's a lot of things that are home and kitchen.
Exactly. I'm not looking for a stove. So make sure your navigation's clean. Easy for people to use. We've even talked about some web apps in the past. We'll put them in the show notes where there was, you know, good good user interface collections, kind of like that Yahoo thing that Mark was talking about.
The next one is not including shipping rates.
Oh, man.
Yeah, especially if it's at the end of the cart and it's a surprise. It's like $8.95 shipping or $12.95 for a little pen or something. And you're like, well, there's no way I'm doing that. I'm out of here.
eBay is the king of this. They finally added like the price plus shipping to the search because it used to just be price. So everyone figured it out. They're like, price, 99 cents, $12 shipping and handling.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, so you'd go on and be like, why is this 99 cents? And then you go get to the point of like right where you're purchasing it. And it's like, just so you know, $10 shipping.
Yeah.
The whole point is I want to know what it's going to cost me the whole time I'm shopping. If I add one item to the cart, I want to know what this plus shipping is going to cost me, because then I know if I can add another item that's like $8 and stay under $20.
Good examples of this are like I think Amazon does it where you can put your zip code in and say calculate the shipping before you even get anywhere near the checkout.
Yeah, before you have an account. If you don't have an account or anything, you know, you have an account, pull their actual zip code from their account. But if they don't, let them put it in. Number 14 is not including store policies. You need to put these up front, let people know, you know, your return policy, your warranty information, things like that.
Yeah, and if it's like software, have your terms of use available, privacy statements.
Is there a restocking fee? Is there an RMA fee? You know, I mean, a lot of places, they'll RMA for you, but they give you a restocking fee if you do RMA, which is a percentage of the purchase cost of the item, which is a pain.
The next one is not putting focus on products. Yeah, I mean, if you're there and you're selling products, you've got to have them on the front page and
make them prominent and big, put pictures. People want to see what they're buying. Don't have just a bunch of text links, you know, that say your product, you know, make people be able to see the product, see it in their home, see it in their hands.
Yeah. And kind of put them in their environment that they're supposed to be. Like if you're selling coats, make sure you've got some pictures of people in the cold and
hiking, you know, make them like, feel cold, make them feel like they would be in this nice warm soft coat. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like, for an example, they're showing, if you're, you know, selling furniture, make huge pictures of, you know, in a house that's, you know, nice and
designed with several items of furniture in there. Actually, this is a really good one, this Pottery Barn, because what it does is it has a whole scene where it's like, well, this is the table, this is the thing on the table, this is the couch, this is the, you know, the coffee table. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
All right, well, that about wraps it up.
Yeah. I want to remind everybody that you can give us feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know what you like. We're still doing the 30-minute show length. If you guys like it, we didn't get much feedback last time. So I want you guys to let us know if you like the half an hour or if you want us to go back to an hour. Let us know. We're curious what you guys think. Or if you have anything you want us to talk about on the show, faceoffshow.com/feedback. Or if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. There's all kinds of ways to subscribe so you can get notifications about new shows as soon as possible. Thank you guys, and we'll see you next week.